Well, I think one thing we're going to do right out of the gate is define what pro-life is.
Scott Klusendorf talking about his presentation at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
That term is now being confused. It's being put up for grabs, and we're going to make clear what the pro-life syllogism is, how we can make that case for life with people who don't accept biblical authority, who maybe don't even know what it is we stand for, and are subject to being confused. So there's a crying need to clarify what pro-life means, what our actual arguments are, and then we'll look at five bad ways people argue against the pro-life case in the public square so that we can be prepared to give good, solid, Christ-honoring answers.
You can meet and hear Scott Klusendorf making the case for life at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Learn more about conference speakers and topics and register at issuesetc.org.
Well, I'm gonna tell you, fascists, you may be surprised. People in this world are getting organized. You're bound to lose, you fascists, bound to lose.
You could go to a history professor and ask them, what was fascism? And they could give you very clear examples of fascism in our most recent history, the latter part of the 20th century. Now, is it only a past tense thing? Fascism was. What is fascism today? Where do we find it? Do we find it in places like academia? Is it just what some people believe, that fascism is kind of an extreme conservatism? Or is it actually the opposite of conservatism? And what's the relationship between Darwinism and communal identity and fascism, whether it is a small group or an entire country? We're going to be talking about the early warning signs of fascism, beginning a conversation with Dr. Jean Edward Veith, Emeritus Provost and Professor of Literature at Patrick Henry College and author of the book Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview. Dr. Veith, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Good to be with you again.
How would you explain the sudden return to currency of the term fascism in America?
Well, fascism has become just one of those words that means evil. And so people use that to attack and discredit people that they disagree with. But fascism is actually a very specific ideology, economic theory, political platform, and worldview that grew up in the early 20th century, but people don't know what it is. They know what communism is, sort of, but fascism is just this sort of blank hole that people project everything that they hate and fear.
So the term may be in currency, but the definition of that term is definitely misunderstood by many.
Yeah, it really is. But it's very important to understand it, because a lot of the fascist ideas have come back and are, in fact, in great currency on pretty much all sides of the political spectrum.
So let's talk about, I guess, first what fascism is not. You say it's not conservatism. What do you mean by that?
That's right. Well, a lot of people say that fascism is just extreme conservatism, but it really isn't. I mean, conservatives in America believe in limited government. Fascists believe in unlimited government. Conservatives believe in things like individual liberty, whereas fascists believe in communal unity of people in the particular group. Conservatives, they believe in free market economics. The fascists believe in national socialism, which is a government-directed economy. You can go on and on and on. Conservatives tend to believe in objective morality. Fascists reject it in favor of a morality that we construct according to our power interest. Conservatives want to conserve the past, want to conserve our civilization. Fascists want to overthrow it and to create something completely different.
Just, if you would, a brief history lesson of where the term actually came from, its mm-hmm. historical origins.
Well, fascism grew up really in the 19th century. A number of intellectual currents came together. One was Darwinism, the idea that the natural law, evolution, progress comes from violent and bloody struggle, survival of the fittest, with one species fighting against the other species, and the individuals fighting each other. And so that was one strain, Darwinism. Another was the thought of Nietzsche, who believed that power was what underlies everything, the thirst for power. And whoever has power creates the civilization, creates morality, creates religion, and all the rest of it. And then there were other romantic people who had, romantic thinkers who had a view of nature, that we need to become one with nature. And you connect that to Darwinism and Nietzsche's idea, you come up with some political theories, other thinkers that really aren't as well known today. They fit that together into a political movement, into an economic theory. And then in the early 20th century, with the Depression, it seemed like everything had fallen apart. There was the option of communism that attracted lots of people. But fascism was put together by people like Mussolini and his intellectual supporters to find sort of a third way between liberal democracy, communism, and now this new fascism. And then you had people like Hitler, who put in a racial component, who tied in a lot of this to the racial pseudosciences and the eugenics movement and the birth control movement, all these things that were other popular currents today. And then he took power. Mussolini took power. Franco took power. There were fascist movements in just about every European country and America during the time of the Depression. And all of these really came to a head in World War II, which also saw the consequences of many of these fascist ideas. It's been sort of wanting to forget it all, and sort of a curtain has been drawn over what was really going on at that time. It's something that my book tries to get behind.
Why was the symbol, at least in Italy, you had mentioned Mussolini, why was the symbol mm-hmm. this bundle of sticks?
Yes, well, those were the fasces. It bundle of sticks tied together around an axe. Now, this was a Roman symbol for the state's power to punish. The axe was used to put to death Roman citizens by cutting off their head. That was a quick and merciful execution, as opposed to crucifixion, what they would do to non-citizens a lot of times, people they especially wanted to humiliate. The rods around that were the punishment of beating. And so that became a symbol for Roman power. Now, Mussolini wanted to bring back the glories of Rome to Italy. He wanted to make it a new Rome. And a lot of the fascist ideas, you know, that may seem sort of absurd today, but this idea of kind of returning to a pagan mindset, to go behind Christianity, go behind the influence of the Bible, to try to bring back the approach to government, to life, and to religion and ethics that they saw in the pagan systems before Christianity became ascendant in the West. That was one of the big motivators of fascism.
So let's talk about it more broadly as a worldview, because it has its political manifestations, that many of which you had just mentioned there, and today, although it doesn't appear to be kind of the political system of any given government. As a broad worldview, what were the characteristics of fascism?
Well, I think the best way to understand fascism is to see it as contrasted with its mortal enemy, the what they call the Jewish influence on Western civilization, by which they meant really the Bible's influence on Western civilization. And the fascists said that this Jewish influence alienated human beings from nature, from themselves, and what they called for was a worldview that saw nature and human beings and the gods all as one. This idea of a transcendent God above the universe who created it, and the universe is his creation. They attacked that. And God is the source of morality, a transcendent objective morality. They attacked that as a Jewish contribution. Instead, they wanted the view that man is an animal, and that man's instincts, his violent impulses, sexual impulses, that those need to be released, and that this biblical Jewish Christian morality makes us suppress our natural existence by making us deny those because of these moral teachings that just leave us frustrated and guilt-ridden. Nature, and also the idea that man does not exist just as an individual, but as a member of a group. They emphasize collective identity. It's what group you belong to, not what you are in yourself. And they stressed the importance of the nation, also the race, especially with the National Socialists, the tribe, and that is the individual needs to lose himself into the group to find his true identity. Nature, I mentioned Darwinism, being at one with nature, these natural impulses. Again, they believe that the biblical view of nature as God's creation, that there's an objective reality that's apart from the human being. Again, they just subjected that to a radical critique. Some of the first environmentalists actually were fascists. It emerged out of that same period, and they blamed the biblical heritage for alienating us from nature. Again, the God's spirituality comes not from a transcendent being, but from the natural world around you, from your own body, from your own will. And this worldview made things like individual liberty, democracy, objective morality, rationalism, these were all condemned as Jewish ideas, and the fascists were trying to create an alternative, not just a worldview, but a different kind of civilization growing out, a modern civilization, but growing out of these the pre-biblical heritage that they believed that they wanted to restore.
Dr. Gene Edward Veith is our guest. We're talking about the early warning signs of fascism, first part of our conversation with him. He's author of the book Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview. When we come back, sometimes the fascists going back into history were just making stuff up.
In Romans 15, Paul tells us, "Therefore welcome one another as Christ has welcomed you for the glory of God." But what does Christian welcome really look like? Find out this month in the Lutheran Witness magazine as we explore hospitality, diversity, and what these ideas mean for Lutheran Christians today. Subscribe or read a sample issue at cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
We have a special offer for first-time donors to Issues Etc. For any size gift during the months of January and February, we'll send you an autographed copy of Pastor Will Wheaton's new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. Make your first-time contribution online at issuesetc.org or send your check to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, and we'll send you an autographed copy of Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey.
Others talk. We have something to say. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC RUCAM. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADC RUCEM.com.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
If day one I use the incorrect name or the incorrect pronouns to that person's face, that may shut down a relationship that will never recover. That said, you don't want to encourage someone in a false identity that can also cause harm.
Even in the best of circumstances, if you take a classroom where God is not talked about, then that is a value.
1% of 1.2 million abortions a year is 12,000.
There's not a single person on planet Earth who doesn't go to church because churches have male pastors. And the reason why pagans don't come to church is because they're born dead in trespasses and sins.
In about 15 minutes, we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. That's just a taste of the four soundbites we'll play for you in their entirety. And then it'll be your opportunity to pick soundbite of the week by voting. You'll give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. In the meantime, we're talking about the early warning signs of fascism with Dr. Gene Edward Veith, Emeritus Provost and Professor of Literature at Patrick Henry College, author of the book Modern Fascism, The Threat to Judeo-Christian Worldview. Dr. Veith, before the break, you were talking about the fascists' attempt to reach back to a pre-Christian era and draw that forward as their model. You mentioned, I think, Mussolini attempting to re-Romanize Italy. But sometimes they were just making history up, weren't they?
Well, that's just it. Even the pagan world was not actually the way the fascists saw it and the way they were trying to recreate it. The pagan world did have a concept of objective morality, at least by the time of Plato and Aristotle, you know, for all their problems. They did believe in an objective universe, not one that we create by the will, but this was what they were. The Nazis sort of seized on these little ancient bits of history to kind of create their own mythology that wasn't even historically accurate, but nevertheless, it gave kind of a spiritual significance to all of the things that they were doing.
Is it a religion, per se?
Well, it is. It's a religion where the government is the god. Critics today warn against the divinization of the state, making the nation, investing the state with your religious impulses, looking to the state. Luther described, you know, what is your religion? Who is your God? Well, what do you look to for your every good? What do you trust? And so modern ideas that are very liberal, the idea that, well, the government should solve all of our problems. If there's a difficulty, the government should do something to solve it. That's ironically a fascist idea that the government should have that role. The idea of not just patriotism, but sort of nation worship. And you see that among some Americans today who don't take it as far as the fascists did, but that's what they encourage. But it wasn't just worshiping your nation. It's worshiping your leaders, worshiping your impulses, not letting moral principles control your behavior. Hitler's great propaganda film is called The Triumph of the Will. And that comes from Nietzsche, and the idea that by our willpower we create our world, we create our universe, and the leader is the one with the will to impose himself onto the world. That's very fascist. You hear that in postmodernism, teaching about the constructivism, that we create our own reality by the choices we make, and so on. A lot of those fascist ideas are still very current.
How does it manifest itself politically? Is it necessarily totalitarian?
No, not really. Well, okay, it will be totalitarian. There's a harsh kind of totalitarianism, and there's a kinder and gentler totalitarianism. For example, I think in China, what we're seeing is a type of national socialism. It's very authoritarianism, very controlling. The type of socialism it is no longer Marxist so much, but the government still controls the economy. And we still see this in places like North Korea and other dictatorships. But you can see a kinder and gentler form, I think, in Western Europe, in some of the social democratic countries, vast welfare state, where the government really is trying, you know, with a kind heart to control things, to make things better. It's not necessarily dictatorial, but they still follow kind of a fascist economic system, which allows private property, but everything is very much controlled by the government, all, you know, for the higher good. So I think there can be a kinder and gentler version of fascism, as well as the harsher dictatorial kind of fascism. You know, the danger is that, you know, the kinder and gentler form might eventually lead to the other kind.
Is it necessarily anti-democratic?
Yes. Well, in the sense, okay, not in eliminating the vote necessarily. Fascist political theory, the leader is the representative of the people. He embodies the nation or the race or the tribe. And so his will is the public's will. Okay, now you can have the democratic kind of sense of that. The people are voting, expressing their will and their political choices. But that only goes so far in a fascist system. You don't need to vote, and typically you don't vote in a fascist arrangement. The leader rises, maybe he's voted into office, as Hitler was, and there may still be elections and so on, just as there was in ancient Rome, to choose the senators, but not the emperor. The full-blown fascist system, you don't need. They might even say it's democratic in the sense that it's of the people, conceived as this unified organism with a leader at its head. But real democracy demands dissension. It demands different ideas competing with each other, different parties, different ideologies. Fascism does not typically allow those. Those are violations of the people, violations of the nation, and they're typically either silenced very brutally or maybe just by being censored and being set aside. But the kind of liberal democracy, liberal meaning freedom, the kind of free society and a free democratic institution with give and take and debate and equal rights and individual rights of freedom of the press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, those kinds of things are completely taken off the table in a full-blown fascist regime.
So individual liberties will wither under fascism.
Mm-hmm.
But what are they replaced with? What is the justification for that people may even willingly surrender individual liberties under fascism? Under mm-hmm. what banner? Why?
Out of solidarity with the community, with the culture, to feel one with your neighbors, with your fellow citizens. It's a model of people joining together into a unity so that they're not alienated from society or from their government or from nature or from their God or anything else. It's a sense of belonging. I think that's maybe a good way to look at it. You belong, you're a part of this higher purpose, virtues of sacrificing, virtues of duty, virtues of surrendering yourself for the others, for the whole. These are very much admired and celebrated in fascist societies. And of course, just like in a football game, you can get so caught up with your team and so excited at the battle and at the contest, and you feel a unity with all the other fans in the stadium. That's kind of what being a citizen of the country is supposed to feel like. And things like war became big mobilizers, heroism, conquest, victory. These all tied into the sort of subjective, emotional benefits that fascism was giving people.
In terms of economics, you had mentioned state control of the economy. How would you say it manifests itself economically?
Well, it manifests itself with sort of a union of the state and corporations. Corporations exist to serve the state directed the corporations, and this alliance between very, very, very big business and government kind of set the framework for everything else. And under fascism, private property was still allowed. Again, this is national socialism. That's how Mussolini even defined fascist economics. It's socialism, not that the state owns everything, but the state controls everything. Lots of government regulations, lots of dictates. When Hitler wanted to mobilize his economy, he went to the big corporations and told them how many tanks and steel and planes he wanted built. And so that view of economics as something that isn't the free workings of a free market, very much controlled from the top, and yet it still incorporates private property, but it's private property in the service of, again, the whole state. When you look at China, for example, it's very prosperous, business is growing, small businesses are allowed, and people are getting rich, and yet it's all under the umbrella of the state, which allows and determines how the economy is going. And it can be a type of socialism that maybe is more effective than communist socialism or Marxist socialism, but still socialism nonetheless. But it's socialism for the nation, for the national interest, and everything is relegated to that.
Dr. Gene Edward Veith is Emeritus Provost and Professor of Literature at Patrick Henry College. He's author of the book Modern Fascism, The Threat to the Judeo-Christian Worldview. You can purchase this book by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Veith, thank you very much.
Okay, my pleasure.
Next time, we'll talk with Dr. Veith about the examples of modern fascism in academia and the alt-right movement and what countries are currently fascist. We're 4 months away from the premier conference for Christian Laity, the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. This year's speaking lineup includes Hank Hanegraaff, Will Wheaton, Craig Parton, Scott Klusendorf, Jonathan Fisk, Angus Manouge, and Hans Feeney. Early bird registration is $110 and includes meals Friday night and Saturday afternoon and evening. You can register by check, make a check payable to Issues, etc., and send it along with the registration form you'll find at issuesetc.org. Send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also register online at our website. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois, 15 miles east of St. Louis. When we come back, it's time to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We've got 4 soundbites to play for you, and you can vote by giving us a call. Phone call voters get to vote first, 1-877-623-6943. Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week is next. The prosperity gospel, godliness, Islam, abortion, religious truth claims, scientism, the centrality of justification. You can meet and hear some of your favorite guests teach on these topics at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
How was school today, kids?
Crazy. Hector's charioteer got hit by a stone, and his eyes fell out into the dust before him there at his feet.
Sounds like Patroclus was being hot-tempered, rude, and quarrelsome again.
He always is. Dad, what's for supper?
I don't know yet. Supper is such a problem.
If it's a problem, you can use the scientific method to figure it out.
Problem? We want supper. Hypothesis? I think Dad will make tacos.
Actually, I was thinking about spaghetti.
Tacos or spaghetti?
False dichotomy.
Is this the after-school conversation of your dreams? Registration is now open for the 2018-19 school year at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, the only classical Lutheran school in the St. Louis area.
Hey, Dad, how did my violin practice sound?
Kiddo, it sounded epic.
Learn more at school.stpaulhamel.org. School.stpaulhamel.org.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.